Welcome to a broadcast called Bound and Gagged, an interview with artist, activist, and prisoner Peter Collins, recorded at CKDU-FM in Halifax, Nova Scotia. I'm Pierre Loisel. Peter Collins, currently incarcerated in Bath, Ontario, spoke to us over the phone about his artwork which satirizes corruption and power both inside and outside of the prison walls, and the lengths with which Corrections Canada has gone to suppress it.
They're just scrambling, looking for a way to use, I guess, some label to shut me up or use some kind of leverage. I think what it comes down to is they're not used to someone criticizing them, not backing down after they've tried to scare them.
A day is coming, and I know it's coming soon, when people are gonna stand up and say that's not how you treat a human being. We'll tear down those walls, oh, Canada, do you know where your prisoners are? Oh, Canada, do you know who your prisoners are? You don't know who your prisoners are, you don't know where your prisoners are, and you don't know who your prisoners are.
Peter Collins is an activist, artist, radio commentator, and a prisoner currently incarcerated in Bath, Ontario. He's currently joining us on the phone to discuss his artwork and the lengths to which Corrections Canada has gone to destroy, criminalize, and suppress it. Welcome to the program, Peter.
Well, thank you.
Many listeners in the Halifax area may be familiar with who you are as well as your work because in early June of this year, your art was on display at the Mi'kmaq Friendship Center. But for those who may not be familiar with who you are, could you give us a brief introduction to the artist, activist, and prisoner known as Peter Collins?
I'm really not very good at this. I enjoyed your introduction of me, so I'd go with that. But the one thing I think is missing and I think is really relevant to anybody who's interested in what I'm doing is, what my background is, what I was convicted of, so that, people know, where I'm coming from and where some of the resistance from the CSC might be coming from as well. And that's, 20 some odd years ago, I was running rampant in the community. I was robbing banks and escaping from prison. I eventually killed a police officer, David Utman, before I tried to rob a bank. I just would like to say that because when people say prisoner, artist, and activist, I think it's important that, everybody knows what I was convicted of and, what kind of idiot I was back then. I like to think that I've changed and, grown as a human being, even under these circumstances. So I do try to, do constructive, positive things now and, unfortunately, a lot of that brings me into conflict with the correctional system, who like to repress any criticism about the work they're doing, and there's a lot of room for criticism about the work they're doing.
Before getting into talking about your artwork and how some of your artwork actually does criticize what Corrections is doing and the like, can you tell us about some of the other activities that have kind of landed you in a bit of hot water with Corrections?
I've written a parole manual that sort of helps prisoners understand what's expected of them from the community, to be released, or what's expected of them from the parole board before they can be released, and they simply don't get that from correctional staff. It's very ironic that the very people who are in charge of delivering that work so hard to stop my sharing that information with prisoners. So at the end of the day, what I was doing was every week I would hold a seminar and class, sort of a workshop where we would, release plans and help guys look toward, the things that contributed to them coming into conflict with the law and maybe, get a better understanding of that so that they could avoid the traps that, that visit themselves so easily on prisoners upon release. And it's a difficult place to learn that kind of thing, because when you're in prison, you're in spite of what you hear on the media, it's really a, you know, not a nice place, and it's you know, it's hard to do your time and to come out a more positive person. So you know, it's good to try to work on it, and it's a shame that CSC fights against that kind of effort so hard. So they closed my workshops down, and won't let me copy the manual and share it with people and stuff like that. So that's one of the things that they do. And so I'm working on trying to find funding and a printer to print those books, those manuals, and then just have them issued to prisoners free of charge if we can manage to get them printed. You know, it's a really good resource manual for families as well, because it teaches you how to advocate effectively on behalf of your loved one or whoever's in, you know, in prison that you're trying to help. And you know, it teaches families about the things that they need to be aware of when they're coming into prison. You know, the reality of things that, you know, that they may never be aware of until they get slapped in the face with it on entry into a prison. So I've been trying to do that. I guess the other one of the other things that I was doing was, you know, taking care of animals, injured animals. I've done that for, I don't know, about 20 years, in varying degrees of secrecy, because they don't like you to do that. They think it's a health hazard to. I suppose in some ways it could be, you know, if you weren't careful. I had found out that they were shooting pigeons with nail guns in their wood shop. The staff had these air-compressed nail guns, and they would shoot the pigeons to, you know, to try and encourage them not to roost in their wood shop. And so I told them that they had to stop, and they just kept on doing it. And they wrote to me and told me that they had you know, legal grounds to do that kind of activity. So I filed a complaint with the Humane Society, and the Humane Society came in and told them that, you know, you're not allowed to destroy roosting birds' nests, that there's a protocol that you have to follow with that kind of thing, and you know, you're not allowed to torture little animals, you know, even if you are wearing a correctional service uniform, you know. People, I guess it's okay, but not animals. Yeah, so they didn't like that. They got very uptight about that. I guess they were embarrassed, and they stopped me from, you know, being able to buy bird seed. And like, I had rescued a couple turtles from some seagulls that were trying to break them open when they were babies, and you know, I built a little aquarium enclosure for them. Quite a nice little operation it was. You know, it had all the lighting and everything for it, and they made me get rid of those. And that was 2 days after the Humane Society came in. You know, they came down with all these new rules and regulations to punish me for that. They went around and some of the staff tried to tell other prisoners that I was an informer, because you know, I had told on them, you know, for killing little animals with their nail guns, and you know, that kind of thing, where, you know, that could turn out badly for somebody, you know. If you know what I mean, like if you get labeled an informer, or if somebody actually believes that you're an informer based on, you know, that kind of nonsense from a staff member, you know, someone could get hurt. That's one of the other things they do.
In addition to those activities that have been kind of getting you into trouble with Corrections Canada, your artwork in particular stands out. Tell us about how you began developing your, I guess, your artistic skills.
I don't know. I just used to do it. When I was in school, I used to do it because I was just drawn to do it, so to speak. You know, I just would be doodling when the teacher was talking, and I would be getting in trouble for doodling when she was talking or he was talking. And then... you know, after I got kicked out of school, not just for doodling, I'm sure there were other mitigating factors that contributed to that, but eventually I was on my own, and then I got in trouble, and you know, with all those bank robberies, and they stuck me in a detention center, and I started drawing, and then, yeah, so I guess as soon as I was had nowhere to turn, you know, I started expressing myself on, you know, graphically, I guess.
I understand that you started doing some of your artistic work in prison while in segregation. How did that come to be?
Well, what they had done was after I had escaped on, you know, I think they had me on, I don't know how many, but a lot of bank robbery charges. I escaped from their, or I tried to escape, and they caught me, and then they put me in their super maximum unit, and then I escaped and from there. And then when I got caught after shooting the policeman, he died, they put me in the... back in the super maximum unit, the same unit, and they wouldn't let me out of anywhere. They wouldn't let me see anybody. They wouldn't, you know, like whenever I was brought out of the cell, I was brought out in handcuffs and shackles. And, you know, after I've forgotten how many months went by, the my lawyer started arguing that they should, you know, at least allow some pencils or something in there for me, you know, a book or something, you know. Something for me to occupy my time while I was waiting for the trial. And so they gave me a bunch of shortened pencils, you know, broken pencils and then sharpened, but they were, you know, very short, you know, for safety reasons. And they and then they left me alone in there with some paper and pencils. And so I started drawing. I think I drew a window on the wall, because there was no window in the cell, and, you know, with a little scenery. And then I drew a home entertainment system on the wall with a socket, but with no plug. And when he came in, he, you know, because every day in the provincial detention centers, they come around to the people, you know, in the hole, and they, I don't, you know, some kind of... I don't know why they do it, but they, you know, they stand, they sort of like an intimidation thing. They all come in and they ask you a bunch of inane questions that don't mean anything, and then they leave, you know, having decreed some punishment for you or whatever. And when he came in, he asked me how I was. I told him I was all right, and then he started freaking out about, you know, these pictures on the wall, how I'd ruined his prison, and he just had the walls painted. And after he was done, I asked him if he could get the electrician down to hook up a plug for my socket so that I could play my radio, and that was the end of my pencils. Yeah, so they took those away.
And obviously from there, you've continued to paint and to draw. One of the things, your artwork is varied. You've got, you know, different styles and different types of art that you do, but some of it in particular satirizes corruption and power as it plays out, I guess, both inside the prison walls as well as outside of the prison. Can you describe some of this work to the listeners?
Let's see. You know, I don't know if anybody remembers, but there was a politician back in, I guess, a couple of years ago now in Ottawa who had called George Bush a moron. And, you know, while everybody agrees, there was all this, you know, political posturing about how outraged, you know, and everybody was. So I did a cartoon of George Bush balancing a bomb on one finger and the world on another finger, and he's on a skateboard, you know, skating through a puddle of blood, and, you know, he's got a moron cap on.
Some of your artwork in particular tackles the so-called war on terrorism. Tell us about that.
Well, I've got a few. I just did some of the Abu Ghraib situation, where all these photographs have come out, and you know, we can see what's really going on in these prisons. And I was watching Donald Rumsfeld explaining that, you know, and I don't know if I'm quoting him directly, but I quote him directly in the cartoon, but I don't have the cartoon right now, but something along the lines of what has been charged is abuse, which is technically different from torture. And you know, and you're looking at these photographs of these guys torn open by dogs, you know, you know, having their you know, being, you know, made into pyramids of nude prisoners with women around, and, you know, and it's just you know, like, just cutting to the you know, to that type of you know, just a sick series of events going on in that prison. Clearly torture by any stretch of the imagination. You can't deny that the person experiencing this, you know, being hooded, hooked up to electrodes, you know, and How could anybody possibly think that's not torture? Except for Donald Rumsfeld and, you know, George Bush and those guys, you know, who live in some kind of delusional fantasy world where, you know, they can do anything they want. And so I did this cartoon where Donald's explaining how his troops, the American troops, you know, are engaged in a complex task of encouraging Iraqi detainees to, you know, take a positive role in helping to build a, you know, a free Iraq. And then, you know, he's pointing to the picture of this guy standing on a box with electrodes attached to him and a hood over his head. And then on his other side, he's got that same picture, and he's, you know, and the caption is that you know, this is a picture of, you know, the Iraqis under Saddam Hussein's regime, where they're, you know, their henchmen torturing a prisoner, you know.
Peter, last time we spoke, you were mentioning something that really kind of brought a connection between prisons and this war on terrorism, or the so-called war on terrorism, particularly as it pertained to Corrections Canada being involved with helping develop prisons in Afghanistan.
Yeah, and actually that was, I was going to tell you about that cartoon as well. I just did a cartoon on that where, you know, you have this corrections officer, CSC officer, looking at these photographs, clearly marked Abu Ghraib, and, you know, his eyes are shocked, and in the next box he's showing it to a friend, and they're going, this is disgraceful, and in the next box the next one's going, you know, this is an outrage to prison guards everywhere, and then in the next box he's saying, you know, this would never happen in Canada, and then in the next box the guy's saying, yeah, we wouldn't allow cameras in our prisons. Yeah, and totally, they were looking at my website recently. My brother put up a website of all my work called buriedaliveillustrations.com, and they had, I guess, stumbled on it, or someone directed them to it or whatever, and they were looking at photographs of some of the things that I'd been doing inside the prison, like, you know, at the family day events where families are able to come in and see their, you know, loved one. I would do face painting for the children, you know, paint their faces up, and, you know, the kids love that. And so the CSC looked at those, and, you know, they stopped anybody from being allowed to take pictures here again because of those, and they told me that I, you know, I've forgotten what exactly their problem was, something about not getting release forms or some kind of nonsense like that. But that's totally their thing, you know, you're not allowed to, you know. Another thing that I'm working on right now is the journalist who was killed in Iran. She was killed, and there was just a trial, and, you know, Canada's talking about how outraged they are, you know, that Iran's having secret trials, and that they're not allowed to be part of it, and, you know, that their justice can't be done in secret, and then, you know, like it's like they don't even acknowledge that they have secret trials in Canada, that you know, people are held on rotating 72-hour security certificates, that you know, the person's never told what they're being held for. Their lawyer's not told what they're being held for, you know what I mean? Like, you look at Arar getting shipped off to Syria, you know, and what